What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show, Wings Take Dream. We're talking about the world's most spectacular flyers. From the tiny and nimble hummingbird to the bird with a wingspan longer than any basketball player, we'll discover mammalian gliders and murmuring starlings. Discover this more as we answer the age-old question, why is that flying squirrel glowing pink?
Is it just bashful?
Joining me today is my friend and the Daily Zeitgeist super producer and co-host of Ethnically Ambiguous and the Twitch stream Deckheads Chief Stews, Anna Hosnier.
Hi.
Welcome, Anna.
Thanks for having me. Welcome back. Thank you. I guess I have done this show. I did it last time with Shireen, right?
That's right, yeah.
I have no memory of a show after I do it. It's just how I've done so many podcasts, I have no memory of anything anymore.
That's all right. Like a swallow back to San Juan Capistrano, you may not remember being here or know why you're here, but here you are again.
Here I am again to talk flight?
Yes.
The movie with Denzel Washington.
yeah, we've decided to take a bit of a pivot with the pod. Yeah. Animals are out. Nobody cares about them anymore. Nope. But we are going to talk about the movie Flight with Denzel Washington.
Oh, what a great film. And now, what did that airplane do?
I mean, you shouldn't drink and fly an airplane, folks. That's my opinion.
That's a strong opinion.
Thank you. Yeah,
it's a hot take. I agree.
Yeah, no, we are talking about Animal Flight, and I got to do a shout out to a listener who sent in a question that inspired this whole episode. I will read their email right now. Hi, Katie. I was listening to the podcast today and finally came up with a question I could send in. So exciting. Here it goes. We know hummingbirds and the adorable hummingbird hawk moth have a gift for hovering, but I noticed some larger songbirds can do it too for just a moment. What's the story here? Size and weight obviously play a role, but what about similarly sized birds with the same diet and habitat? Can some of them hover while others have to get by with just boring old flying? Why? Please stay the most charmingest host in all of podcast land. Aw, thank you. Ramon. Very nice. That is a great question. And yeah, it's really interesting because when we kind of think about birds flying, it's like, yeah, the birds, they flap their wings and up they go. But actually, there's a lot of differences in how birds fly and the actual physics of like how a hummingbird gets in the air and how a big old vulture gets in the air. It's a completely different set of physics. With hummingbirds, they're teeny tiny, little and small. Have you ever like held a hummingbird, Anna?
Oh, no. I've seen them up close, like at my hummingbird feeder. I've seen them fight, mm-hmm. but I don't think I've ever touched one.
Yeah. I feel like the only time I've held a hummingbird, it's been dead, which
Okay. Yeah.
is a little sad.
That makes more sense as to how you would have touched it.
Right. Yeah. Not look, I didn't. I'm not responsible. I didn't do anything wrong. But, you know, like,
you know what? You defend you really quickly to defend yourself. I don't know about that, Katie.
This is how God. I found it, with a tiny knife in its back and a note saying Katie did it.
I will say they fight a lot. So if one hummingbird stabbed another in the back, I would not believe it.
Yeah, they're mating. Kind of like the competition between males is so fierce. We're actually going to talk about at the end of the show the bird that's like the exact opposite when it comes to like the mating. Like hummingbirds joust essentially when they're competing with other males to mate. It's very, very brutal, very metal. And another bird, one of the biggest birds in the world, is actually very sweet and gentle when it comes to mating. So you can't judge a bird by how cute and small it is. But yeah, they are very interesting flyers because they don't kind of do just the like flap, flap, flap thing. They almost vibrate with how fast they're flying.
Right.
And it's when you're thinking about like how different birds fly, it's sort of like a helicopter versus an airplane when it comes to hummingbirds versus bigger birds. So a helicopter is designed to be able to hover with these really quickly rotating blades that pushes air down and pushes the helicopter up. Mm. Whereas like a plane basically has to get some forward movement and uses the lift of air passing over and under its wings to keep flying.
Oh.
Yeah, so kind of it's not exactly the same. Birds aren't helicopters. I know like people are like, oh, birds are drones. Lol, memes, blah, blah, blah. But no, they're designed differently than a drone. They both do spy on us, but Okay. Technically slightly different physics going on. With hummingbirds or hawk moths, like the listener pointed out, these hummingbirds have a evolutionary look-alike called the hummingbird hawk moth. And I've provided you with a picture of a cool example of parallel evolution there.
Whoa. What?
Where it's a moth that actually looks exactly like a hummingbird, but it's a moth. We've been lied to.
I can't really even understand like what I'm looking at. Like, what is this? Is that its tongue in the front, or it's just got a little hook?
Yeah, it's proboscis, which is essentially like a tongue, but on an insect.
Does that go back in its mouth?
Yeah, it can. It can be withdrawn and like pulled back in, and that's okay. How it sips nectar. Yeah,
got it. Okay. I understand now what I'm looking at. What a surreal looking little guy, because he kind of also looks like he's got like cat eyes.
Yeah, and that's what's so interesting is that what looks like a pupil on it, like a cat pupil, is actually not a pupil at all.
Oh, of course.
It is. It's compound eyes. This occurs in actually a few insects like mantises. They look like they have a pupil that's like always conveniently looking right at you, and you feel like you're being followed, like the mantises are looking at you. And it's actually when light enters these compound eyes, it actually forms a dark spot of where all the light is getting sucked in to the eyeball. So it's like if you have like a shiny ball and that highlight, it's like light bouncing off of the ball. So you move the ball, but the little highlight part on the ball always seems to kind of like follow you around, because that's like from your angle and the angle of light, that's what's shining, reflecting back at you. So you see that highlight. It's just the opposite with a compound insect eye, where that's like where the light is being absorbed. So it's a dark spot that follows you around, and it looks like it has a pupil and it's watching you, but no, it's not. I mean, it may be watching you. It may have a whole system of surveillance cameras that you don't know about, but it's actually not watching you with a little pupil.
Got it. Okay.
It doesn't have one. Yeah. But yeah, very eerily similar. They have a similar flying style too. But we'll talk about the bird aspect of this, because I think we're kind of used to insects being able to buzz around and fly really quickly because they're so light. Like if you've ever held a moth, I don't know. You haven't held a hummingbird. You don't seem to like to hold dead things, which is weird to me. But
well, I've definitely picked up a dead moth, and like I've had like dead moths like within like a space I'm in, and I've like picked them up and like taken them outside. But like I've never I don't understand how you would even touch a moving, like a bird or a moth, if it was alive, because they're just like flitting around to get away from you the whole time.
Well, I've actually had a sphinx moth, which is very similar to the hawk moth, land on my shirt and refuse to go. But it died anyways. So that's a fun, it's like a fun story, like Homeward Bound.
Was it like panicking or was like, no, please?
I think it was probably just at the end of its life cycle. And it was just like, I die here. Here is where I die.
Yeah, interesting.
You know what they say? The old saying, if a moth dies on you, an angel gets its wings, right?
That is actually, yeah. I have a wood plank that says that over in my kitchen.
That's tacky. That's tacky.
How dare you? That is a classic saying.
Live, laugh. And lip moths die on your shirt. Yeah. Good luck. So these smaller the bird, basically in answer to Ramon's question, when you have a smaller bird, typically speaking, the faster its metabolism is and the faster it can fly. So you do see a lot of small birds similar to the hummingbird that are able to some extent do this kind of like flying, hovering move. Not as well as the hummingbird can, because the hummingbird has physically evolved to specialize in extremely rapid wing beats and extremely precise hovering. So depending on the species, hummingbirds can beat their wings from 10 to 80 times a second. So the speed of the wings typically follows the size of the hummingbirds. The bigger the hummingbird, the slower its wing beat, relatively, because it's still really, really fast, but giant hummingbirds who weigh in about 20 grams are the slowest with 10 to 15 beats a second. And the amethyst wood star, a tiny hummingbird that weighs only 3 grams, beats its wings at about 80 beats a second, which I can't even think that fast.
No.
I can't even, it hurts to think about. Like, I try to think about, like, actually doing that, and it hurts my brain because I can't put that many thoughts about bird wings in 1 second.
Well, one, it's with that purple or that amethyst color, that, like, magenta color on its neck is the most beautiful color I've ever seen. It's so vibrant.
Yeah, yeah. They have these, like a lot of birds, they have these micro structures in their wings that refract light that makes it so bright and iridescent. Yeah. It looks like jewels, probably in part because, like, with jewels, like, that's also has to do with, like, how light is refracting in the jewel. And so, like, you know, they've got jewels for wings.
Also, the name Amethyst Woodstar. That's like if I went to like Malibu, I would meet someone named that.
I'm Amethyst Woodstar. Would Beautiful. You like to try some of my essential oils?
Yeah. Amethyst. Oh.
I just like to use oils for my feminine flow, Anna. Would you like to join me?
If your name is Amethyst Woodstar, I will do anything you say.
Here's the new product. It's made out of starfish tears and octopus buttholes.
Oh my god, it sounds like it will work. Anything obscure like octopus buttholes, I'm like, well, why else would they be grabbing, you know, octopus buttholes unless it actually works?
Right. Right. The weirder the ingredient, it's like it must work because they wouldn't go to the trouble, surely.
No, of course not.
I would definitely. Someone named Amethyst Woodstar is like, you know, try octopus butthole. Seriously, it'll work. It's like, no, I'm in. Mm-hmm. I'm all in. Yeah. So they are, in addition to being absolutely gorgeous, just can beat their wings at a ridiculous speed, which allows them to be able to hover in air. If you've ever seen a hummingbird up close, they can like stop in midair and just like stay there stationary, staring at you. Which is really like, if you ever want to wear a hat made out of hummingbird feeders, like some guy, I remember reading a story about, he created a hat that was essentially a hummingbird feeder so he could sit down and watch hummingbirds come up to his face while they like had sips of nectar. And that seems like the life. I want a hummingbird feeder.
They would hover like right here.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Right in front of his
eyes. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah. So what's interesting is these wing beats are the way that the hummingbird is shaped really influences how it uses physics to keep it afloat. So the twisting, it has these twisting downstrokes, which create lift. And the upstrokes also keep the bird afloat, because usually when a bird flaps its wings, like the downstroke pushes it up, and then the upstroke doesn't really help it, because it's like you're not pushing down on the air, you're just like lifting your wings back up. But the hummingbird, because of this like twisting motion of its wings at sort of a rotated angle, the upstroke actually cuts through the air in such a way that it creates these small air vortices, like vortexes, that act like tiny tornadoes, and through some physics that I don't quite understand, like creates kind of a vacuum that gives the bird even more lift. So it's like getting double duty with like pushing up on the downstroke and then also creating some kind of weird wing tornado with the upstroke.
A vortices is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
It's just the plural of vortex.
I know, but Latin. I've never even thought of that before. But that's like a vortices. Like, I remember when I went to Sedona and everyone's like, you gotta find the energy vortexes. And I was like, that's just the concept of a vortex is very cool to me. And now that there's vortices,
yeah, that does sound like something that Amethyst Woodstar would say, right? Oh, like, God. You gotta find the energy vortices.
She knows where they all are.
Which you can definitely get with this octopus butthole, trust me.
Let the octopus butthole lead you to the vortices.
Open your mind to the octopus butthole. That weird tingling, numb feeling you're feeling in your fingers, that's just it working.
That's the vortices.
So their wings are also very stiff and don't bend in the same way that other birds' wings do, so that it allows them to do these really fast beats. Because if they're bending, they just it won't work in the same way in creating these, like slicing through the air like a blade.
Right.
And so it allows them this ability to hover unlike any other bird. And larger birds typically can't hover at all. One of the largest birds that can hover does it in a much different way. So kestrels are a small raptor, so a small bird of prey, like a hawk or an eagle or something, will take advantage of strong updrafts to hover in one place. So they'll find a windy spot and face opposite the wind direction and adjust their wings. So basically, they just become like a bird kite. And this allows them to stay in one spot to look out for prey. But this is all about them being able to use available wind currents to stay afloat. They can't beat their wings fast enough to like hover by using wing beats.
Wow, so a wind kite, or it's like a wing kite. A wind kite. It's the same thing. So
bird kite.
Yeah,
tie a string to them and you got yourself a cool new toy, everybody. Don't do that.
I never really understood the physicality of that, but now that you're like describing it in detail, like they're so interesting. We need more hummingbirds. Let's just
add more birds.
Hummingbirds. We need more hummingbirds specifically.
Oh, right.
Hovering around.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, if you live in an area where you get hummingbirds, you can get certain plants in your garden or on your balcony that attract hummingbirds. You can also get hummingbird feeders that will attract hummingbirds in certain, like, I think you can also get like little whetstone things that like just have little pools of water that they like to drink from. There's definitely ways you can manipulate hummingbirds to come to your home, and you can get a bunch of them there. So,
you can wear a hat, a hummingbird feeder hat.
A hummingbird feeder hat. I wonder if they sell those. I'm going to Google it.
Hummingbird. I'm sure they do.
Bird feeder hats. Safe search off. Let's check it out.
You can get it in 20 seconds from Amazon.
Oh, lots of people have done this. But can I buy one or do I have to make it on my own? Okay. Well, there's handheld hummingbird feeders, but I don't think that's as stylish as an actual hat. Like there's a red hummer ring feeder, so you can wear it as a ring.
I saw that.
Right, but I want a full-on hat, though, is the thing.
Yeah, it looks
like on my head.
You'll have to make one yourself.
Yeah, maybe like they can't make them, because then if like a hummingbird like knocks your eyeball out thinking your eye is delicious nectar, then they'd get sued. But
I just looked it up as well. Under Good Living Guide, there's this article that says hummingbird feeder hat provides a fantastic bird watching experience.
Oh, do they have instructions how to make it?
Well, they have there apparently there's a many options on how to make. Like I Google imaged it and there's so many different versions of it.
Oh yeah, there's different styles for like what kind of hats you want to wear. Like you want to have a just a casual baseball hat. This guy's got it. He's just got like a like an apparatus attached to his baseball hat with little hummingbird feeders. But oh, and she the lady down here's got like a sun hat with feeders attached to it and a bunch of flowers. So you can like dress it up, dress it down.
A lot of people have thought about this.
They have, and I congratulate them for their ingenuity.
Wow. Yeah.
I want to do like one of those hats they wear to like horse races. You know what I'm talking about?
The what are they called? A fastener? No.
Fascinators?
Fascinators. There you go.
But the big ones, like the really big ones that look like a Getty Museum on your head, like that defy physics, but then with a bunch of flowers and hummingbird feeders attached to it. And heck, why not just some bird seed on the top? You know,
Go for it.
A little cup of peanuts so the squirrels can get in there. Yeah, just, you know, just a big hat with a bunch of food. A hot dog on it. Let the seagulls come in and join. I don't care.
Oh my God. You're going to die if you put hot dogs on your hat. People are going to come for you. Or people, birds are going to come for you.
Birds are going to come for me specifically.
People as well. Baseball lovers.
Bird people, right. Yeah. No, I know. It's a risky thing to do, but I just want to be able to see a baseball lover up close.
It's great for baseball lover watching. Okay.
So speaking of gliding, the way that kestrels float in the air, it's interesting because you go from the hummingbirds who have perfected the art of perfect hovering and perfectly precise flying. Mammals are not as great at that, with the exception of bats, who are amazing flyers, actually quite good flyers, surprisingly efficient. Our other attempts at flight as mammals have been more of a kind of like just jump and let Jesus take the wheel. So,
okay.
We actually, last episode, we talked about convergent evolution, and I didn't have time to talk about these guys, but I think they're really cool. So, I couldn't resist mentioning them on the flying episode. So, flying squirrels, sugar gliders, and colugos are three entirely different species of gliding mammals who all look like they should be cousins, but they're not. It's a example of parallel evolution. So flying squirrels are a rodent in the squirrel family found in North America and Eurasia, and they basically are squirrel, but you stretch out the skin so that it's like a squirrel napkin. And then they can fly through by using these folds of skin that stretch from their forelimb ankles to their hindlimb ankles. And this is called a patagium, the membrane of skin connecting their limbs. And that allows them to glide. And this patagium has evolved separately in at least two other animals. So the sugar glider, who is not a rodent, it is a marsupial in the possum family found in Australia, New Guinea, and Indonesia. And it looks a lot like a flying squirrel.
Yeah, I can't really tell the difference other than they have stripes on their head.
Yeah, and a little pink nosy.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, they really do look like they should be the same animal, but they're not. In fact, they're not even in the same group of animals. They're completely different. The flying squirrels are rodents and the sugar gliders are marsupials on a completely different continent.
There's such a freedom into just jumping and opening up your arms and body and letting yourself just glide on down.
I know. Have you seen those videos of people in squirrel suits? Like,
oh yeah, of course.
They're those it's like if jumping out of an airplane and using a parachute isn't like scary enough for you for some reason, there's a suit you can wear where you have parachute material that runs from your front arms to your back legs.
Yeah.
And you basically become a flying squirrel and you jump off a cliff and then just like zoom downwards. It's not safe.
No.
It's highly dangerous. A lot of people die doing it. So it's not like, oh yeah, we've figured out how to make humans fly. It's like, yeah, maybe like 70% of the time. And then there's a big chunk of times that it doesn't really work out well. So, but yeah, watching someone do that does something, like it makes my butt like pucker inwards. I'm not really sure. It's like this feeling of free falling in a dream where all of your insides start to like shrivel up.
Yeah.
Like you just ate a lemon with your butt or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
No, I know. It's everything about it makes you want to like crawl into a ball.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
I could never.
I could never. No, I can't conceive of doing that. But yeah, I mean, these little animals do it all the time and they're perfectly happy to. And then the other species are colugos, which are flying mammals found in Southeast Asia. And while they look like they should be related to sugar gliders or flying squirrels, yeah, they are actually more closely related to primates.
What?
So yeah, yeah, they are. While they are not primates, they share a common ancestor with primates. Probably their closer relatives are things like lemurs. But yeah,
okay.
A slight difference between them and sugar gliders and flying squirrels is that their undersides aren't as furry. So it looks a lot more horrifying from their bellies because they look.
Oh, yeah. They look more like a bat, kind of.
Yeah. Like a bat, but with weird wings that just stretches over its whole body. So
right,
it definitely looks like a cryptid from underneath. But when you look at the whole animal, like from the top, they're very cute. They're very fuzzy and cute. They do look a little bit like if you rolled out a lemur with a rolling pin and gave it weird wings.
Rolled it out. That's funny. Okay. It's weird that they're not related, but okay.
Yeah. Well, you'll just have to take my word on it.
This, you know, species thing, okay? Because to me, they all look
species.
They all look the same. So if mm-hmm. you're going to tell me they're not even in the same family,
no, yeah,
mm-mm.
Yeah, I know. It's yeah. Sometimes like Mother Nature just pulls a prank on us. It's like you think this animal is the same as this animal? No, buddy, it's not even on the same continent.
That's wild.
Oh. Such weird. It's so funny to me how to like we just keep evolving similar things. Like, just take like a mouse and like squish it so it floats like a frisbee.
I mean, I feel like this is like a great example of evolution of like they just all needed this, so they evolved to have it in their different spaces because they're not technically connected, but like in whatever world or whatever environment they live in, they just were like, well, I need to be gliding. So yeah. I'm going to need to evolve into a glider.
Yeah. Look, I need to be more like a kite because I've been jumping off these trees. And let me tell you, when you hit the ground, that is not fun.
I need to be more like a kite. I wish I could just think that as a person. I'm like, I need to be more like a kite. And then it would happen.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like, I guess that's what people thought when they developed the squirrel suit that... And they wore that and, you know, some of them at least survive when they do that.
Yeah.
Oof.
Well, they, I mean.
But there's never been like Red Bull.
It's like Red Bull evolved them.
Red Bull. Know? Red Bull gives you wings.
It's probably like Red Bull sponsored squirrel suit. Doesn't that right. seem like, it just feels like something Red Bull will be like, and we also just jump off mountains with squirrel suits. And you're like, oh my gosh. Okay.
Did you ever like watch those commercials as a kid and think, well, maybe if I drink it and like jump off, you know, the balcony, I could actually fly.
I wonder because
I was definitely
the thing.
Dumb enough to have that thought occur to me.
Yeah.
As a kid. Yeah. And I also did the thing where it's like I took like a blanket and tried to make my own parachute and like would jump off not high heights. Because I was smart enough to know that I would get really hurt if I did that. But, yeah, I definitely did try to kind of do human squirrel action, flying squirrel action, and it never worked.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a tech behind it that either you have to evolve your body into or Red Bull has to build for you. I'm really convinced Red Bull is making these suits.
I think I'd be okay with like just big flaps of skin if it meant I could fly, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Like, if you could tuck them in somehow, like fold them up when they're not in use. But yeah, that'd be awesome.
Folding them up when they're not in use. I have pockets. I mean, for
that's how these ones, like when you look at them when they're not flying, not gliding, they look pretty cute and like poofy and fluffy, but it just turns out that they can like transformer into like a flying napkin.
Yeah.
But we're going to take a quick break, and then when we get back, we are going to talk about murmurations, which is not just me mumbling into the microphone and not doing good podcasting. It's something else, and it's really cool. So we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Anna, have you ever seen a bird murmuration?
Oh, you want me to lie? Of course. No, I've never.
Me? Of course. I love murmurations. I mean, God, the murmuration of 1984, it was amazing. No one yep. can forget that murmuration.
I know exactly what you mean. Yup.
Well, bird murmurations are basically when you have a giant flock of birds all flying in unison. They will form these mind-bending patterns in the air. And I've actually included for you a video of some really amazing starling murmurations, if you want to check that out.
I think I have seen video of this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen this in person, though.
Yeah, I've never seen bird murmurations in person because I've never lived anywhere where there are like huge migratory flocks of starlings.
It looks like there's like, oh God, it looks like they'd kill you if they came through you.
Well, yeah, if they like flew right through you, I think you would die, right?
Oh God. Wow. That's so cool. It's so mesmerizing to look at. It's almost yeah. like a visual therapy where you're just taking it in and letting your mind shut off.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of almost hypnotic, like the a hypnotic sort of psychotropic patterns that these birds are managing. So you'll look in the sky and you'll see what looks like kind of a spotty black cloud. And it's all made out of a huge flock of birds. And as they turn directions and fly, there's like patterns that like form through them, like waves of darker bands, and like as they turn, like it changes shapes, but you can actually see like a wave of like dark color like move through it as they all simultaneously shift directions. And it's beautiful and kind of intimidating too. It's like one of those things where it's like, you know, when it's like you're in awe of something, something is awesome, like the true meaning of the word awesome. It's like I'm actually in awe when I see this because it's so big. And it's like this big blob moving in the sky. I think if I had never seen this before and didn't know what it was, I would think it was aliens.
Yeah, I could see that. Also, like in that movie, The Croods.
Oh, yeah.
They have those like whatever when they get to that weird land, they have those creatures or like it looks like that. The starlings flying all together, but then they just come through and like eat a giant like creature like a rhino or something by just like going by it, and then all that's left, or they come and like take it over, and then all that's left is just its bones.
Right.
That's what I think about.
Yeah. Was this the Croods 1 or the Croods 2?
I think 2.
Okay. Croods 2 back in action. Yeah. I only saw the Croods 1, I think, on an airplane. So my memory is a little hazy of the Croods adventures, but. Fortunately, starlings do not eat flesh, so you're not actually in danger when you see one of these murmurations. Unless you're under it, then you might get pooped on. But yeah, so murmurations, while also looking like amazing works of art in the sky that are kind of unbelievable, they are really interesting from a scientific perspective, from a physics and from animal behavior perspective. So murmurations are patterns that occur when you see flocks of thousands of birds all flying. It's similar to like a school of fish, you know, when you see a school of fish and then they have those like waves of weird, it looks like a wave of a shiny color or a dark band moving through it because the fish are all turning at the same time. It's right. Like that, but in the sky. This typically happens during mass migration of European starlings. So starlings are a bird that it's a little smaller than a pigeon. It's actually really beautiful, in my opinion. It's got this dark purple iridescent color. It's like purpley black. It's got like black feathers that can like iridesce. It looks like an oil slick or something where when the light shifts, it can like turn kind of purpley, kind of green.
I was going to say it would be cool because I was looking at the photo, like if you could see those colors within the murmur or whatever that is.
I know. Like, I know.
That would be cool.
I don't know if you can. I think they're probably too far away for those two colors to really register. But yeah, I don't, since I've never actually seen one in person, I've only seen distant videos of them. I don't know if you can. Yeah, they are individually quite beautiful too. They're called starlings because they have these little speckles. I think it's because of the little white speckles on them that looks like stars. So they will gather in the hundreds of thousands during their migration south throughout Europe. So there can be over 700,000 individuals in a single flock of European starlings. So the question of, well, why do these murmurations occur is actually more mysterious and complicated than it seems when you first think about it, because they spend sometimes 45 minutes in the sky just forming these complex patterns as they move in unison. And so the purpose of this is not really well understood, even among ornithologists, which is like someone who studies birds, the bird whisperers. So they're like, when you think about it, it's like, okay, well, large flocks are protective, right? Like if you're a bird, you want to be in a big flock. So it makes sense why there's a big group of them. And by, clustering with a bunch of other birds, you lessen the chance of being preyed upon. So it kind of makes sense that they would move in this big group. So that part, maybe not so mysterious, but how are they forming such complex patterns and how are they doing it?
And how do they know like which direction they're supposed to go?
Exactly. So that's a big question. And that part of it has actually been somewhat answered by research. So in Italy, in Piazza dei Cinquecento, University of Rome physicists led by Andrea Cavagna and Irene Giardina have been studying starling murmurations for nearly two decades. So these are physicists interested in it.
Okay.
They set up multiple cameras to gather 3D data on starling flocks. So starling populations in the area of Rome has increased to be in the millions during migration. So they set up this mass starling surveillance operation, like a bird ice cream van. Don't worry about it, birds. Just some normal bird ice cream. So they used all this camera data to create a computer model of the starling flocking behavior. So basically, like, taking in all this information they got from all these cameras and then turned it into a computer program through computer magic, and were able to basically say, like, well, okay, figure out how they're managing to do this. And so last episode, we actually talked about something called the Game of Life, which is this old-timey computer game where you would just put in a few simple rules for each, like, pixel on the screen, and it would create, like, this amazing complexity from a few rules of pixels forming patterns. And it's pretty similar here, because what these researchers found is that each starling positions itself depending on the its seven closest neighbors. So it basically tries to get in the center of, like, its seven closest neighbors and be kind of equally distant from each of them. So it's kind of like when you're driving on the freeway, like, you don't base your position on the freeway on a bunch of drivers way far away that you can't see. You just look at the people in front of you, next to you, and behind you. And if you're a good driver, you try to, like, maintain sort of an equal distance, like, buffer around you.
Like a, like, chain reaction, literally. Like,
yes. Yeah, exactly. Whoa. So if one starling changes direction on the other side of the flock, that information quickly transmits to starlings that can't even see that bird, because they're all very quickly reacting to their seven closest neighbors. In fact, they're so quick that a bird on the edge of a flock can change its direction, causing a flock of hundreds of birds to all move in less than half a second. So information, like, per hundred of birds, like, travels in less than half a second, which is pretty good.
Whoa.
Better than my internet, for sure. I think we need bird internet, right?
Yeah, if it's that quick, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah.
They should just be in charge of our internet. Yeah, like, Spectrum, the worst. Birds,
yeah,
let's do this.
Bird internet. It's got to happen. They promised us fiber optics. We didn't get it. They promised us Google Fiber. We didn't get it.
Mm-mm.
I'm pinning my hopes on bird internet. You
I
know
hope
what?
So.
I mean, there's nothing birds could do to us that Spectrum hasn't already done to us, to be honest.
Bird fiber.
Right. Like, I'd rather be pooped on by a bunch of birds than deal with Spectrum internet. Anyways, this thus concludes our internet roasting section of the podcast.
That was pretty good. We did pretty well.
Internet. Am I right, you guys? So many problems. Always too slow. Zing. Got them. Speaking truth to power. All right. But back to the birds. That's how they do that. That's how they do these incredible murmurations. And but the question still remains of, like, why are they doing this? So one potentially obvious answer would be that, like, oh, well, it's protective. By doing these movements, these coordinated movements, it's intimidating to predators, because it gives the predators a sense that this is a much bigger organism, or it confuses the predators about, like, where it's going or what it's doing. And this is actually behavior that bees will do. So a hive of bees will sometimes all come outside the hive and, like, sit on the hive, and then all flick their wings in a wave, like, synchronously, in synchronization. And this creates what looks like these concentric waves of dark bands of color just, like, moving through the hive. So it looks like a bullseye that's, like, constantly expanding and contracting, and it's really mesmerizing. It looks like you're being hypnotized by the bees, and it's mesmerizing, and it makes potential predators, like wasps or birds that might otherwise try to, like, attack the hive, like, it intimidates them, and it confuses them, and it makes them not want to approach. So that's the thought of like, well, maybe this is what marmorations do. They basically scare off predators from the area or confuse them so that they give up. But one of the problems with this theory is that marmorations last so long that researchers and animal behavioral experts think that it doesn't quite explain, like, well, why would they be out so long? Because if you're trying to ward off predators, going back to like a roosting area is the safest place to be. So why are you spending all of this time out in the open doing this behavior that, even though it may kind of help intimidate some predators, there's definitely a chance that like a peregrine falcon is going to come in and get some unlucky guy who's like on the edge of the flock.
Have they thought maybe they're just kind of like having fun?
That's actually exactly what they've thought. That's a really good point. So one of the more recent theories about it is that they're just kind of having fun.
Yeah.
So starlings are actually highly intelligent. They are one of the types of birds that can figure out puzzles. They actually can mimic human voices, similar to a parrot. So they can talk. They might not know exactly what they're saying, but they can definitely talk. They are sometimes a nuisance in some areas because they can figure out how to open things. So like they can figure out how to open milk bottles. So if you get milk delivered to your door, they can get into that milk and drink the milk.
Wow.
So they're highly intelligent. And we know the more intelligent an animal is, the more enrichment and play that they crave. So it may be that they are all essentially dancing with each other. It could be a form of social engagement that is both fun to do and also reinforces these social bonds in a big flock of individuals who might otherwise struggle to feel a connection with the bigger flock. So, yeah, no, I mean, you're exactly right that this is potentially the reason. They're just having fun.
Good time.
I love whenever we're trying to figure out some kind of weird animal behavior and then someone's just like, well, maybe they're just farting around, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I would be doing. Me and my homies, yeah. We were like, let's go just murmur around. It'll be cool.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Let's murmurate.
You get a little high. Do a little murmuring.
Do some murmurations. Yeah. I'm so excited about to get my second dose of the vaccine. I want to murmurate. Mm-hmm. Once we're out of quarantine, let's all murmurate.
Let's all murmurate.
You want it? Okay, let's find a place, find time, and let's all get together and murmurate.
I like the idea of murmurating because it doesn't really like sound like what you think it is.
Right.
We're all just out here murmurating.
It again sounds like something that Amethyst Woodstar is like trying to be like, hey, so we're going to meet up at the beach. And we're going to have our octopus buttholes with us, and we're going to murmurate.
We're going to murmurate.
We're going to murmurate for 45 minutes and really open our consciousness up.
I'm actually taking a murmuration class with Amethyst Woodstar teaching it. So
right.
It was hard to get into, waitlisted for years.
I know. But the frustrating thing is she's always trying to like sell you stuff, like Jade. You shouldn't say
and that. I've bought them all. I can't stop. She's just so convincing. It's the soft tone she speaks.
I know.
In.
She's just softly saying, now we're gonna murmurate, and I want you to spend 5 minutes with your dead octopus and we'll murmurate together.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Anna, what do you know about albatrosses?
That's not the fish?
It's not a fish. It's a bird.
Is it a type of fish, too?
No. Huh. Hang on. Now you've got me wondering. Albatross?
Oh, no. I'm thinking of albacore.
Albacore. Oh, yeah. Wait a second.
Is there albatross fish as well?
Albatross fish. I Googled albatross fish, and nope. That's just the name of a company.
Okay, then I'm definitely thinking of albacore, right?
Yeah, I think you're thinking of albacore. I don't know of any fish called an albatross fish.
Yeah, I'm thinking of albacore.
Albacore, yeah. No, albatross is a bird. Albacore is a type of tuna.
Got it.
And a manticore is like a lion, a flying lion demon.
I'm sorry, what?
flying lion demon. A manticore? Isn't that like a lion with a scorpion tail?
Manticore. I've never even heard of that. Heard of it.
Yeah, It's a flying lion with a scorpion tail and a human face is a manticore.
This is the, I think of it as like a sphinx.
Oh,
but
right.
Like not really a sphinx. It's a...
But it's like a male.
Yeah, this is from...
are typically...
Iranian
lady.
Culture, actually. We have these, like, on our... there's, like... That's weird. I've never known it was called a manticore. Maybe I think of it as, like... Yeah, it's like a mythical Persian creature. Wow, I've never even known that it was called a manticore. News to me.
That is cool. What's, like, what are the myths surrounding it?
It's, like, you can't conquer it, basically. I don't know. It's, like, nice. It's apparently, like, the strongest... mythical creature that there is.
I mean, it is a lion with a scorpion tail and it can fly, so I believe it.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. I only know like what it's called in Farsi because I've legitimately like never spoken about this thing.
What is it called in Farsi?
It's like a it's like a madia, like something like that, like mm-hmm. It's very similar, actually. Now that I'm, like, saying it and thinking about it, it makes sense that it's a manticore. Because it's, like, so it's, like, man-person? A human? Honestly, I don't know how to translate. I'm not very good at, like, translating certain things from Farsi to English because I just, like, don't know the roots and stuff.
Right.
Because I'm not like, I didn't take Farsi in school. I'm just learned it speaking growing up in my family and like speaking
right.
Kind of more of a slang Farsi.
I mean, I don't mean to like be like, now suddenly be an etymology scholar.
It's mad the whore, but like, I don't understand why it's like man who eats or something like that.
Oh, man eater. I just Googled actually manticore etymology and it's the same thing for manticore. It's man. It's from the Greek manticorus. And actually corrupt reading in Aristotle for Martichorus, which is from an old Persian word meaning man-eater. So the Greeks actually got it from the Middle East.
Okay, that makes sense. Because to me, it literally, madhor means literally like man. I guess it makes sense, man-eater. I couldn't connect that in my mind, though, in the moment when you asked me. I was like, a man to eat? What could that be? obviously man-eater. That's so obviously in front of me.
A man you can eat.
I didn't make
that connection. We all wish we had that, folks.
Mador. That's the Farsi saying of it. But manticore, now it all makes sense.
Wow. And that's an English word for it. Manticore comes from the Greek word, which in turn comes from the old Persian word. So like it's just a big circle.
Yeah. Wow.
Comes full circle. So we got to manticore because we started at albatross and then we went to albacore and then we went to manticore.
Yeah.
So let's back it up to albatrosses. But speaking of more myths and legends, I want to talk about how the expression "an albatross around your neck" comes from. Have you heard that expression? It's not used as much, I think, nowadays, but there's this expression it's like an albatross around my neck, or this thing is a real albatross around my neck.
No, I've never heard that.
God, you're making me feel like an old person.
I literally Katie, me and my friends don't talk about these kinds of things.
But it's to be fair, I guess I never really heard it in real life growing up. It's just an expression, I guess, that used to be used more often than it is now.
Oh. Well, the other thing is I was raised by Persian immigrants, so I don't know a lot of classic American sayings or anything like that, because my parents don't say that kind of stuff. They have their own. I know a lot of weird Persian sayings where I'm like, what does that even mean? Because it doesn't translate correctly to English. But American sayings and stuff like that are actually a big blind spot of mine. I just don't know.
Might even be more of a British thing than American, because I've only ever seen it British people use it. I never heard it growing up. I've never heard it used in maybe in a New York Times article I've seen it, but they're ridiculous people.
Yeah.
You're right, for the New York Times.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, the legend behind this saying is actually really interesting. So even if you've never heard the term an albatross around your neck, where it comes from is ridiculous. So it's actually so an albatross around your neck, just for people who are younger than me or don't read the same weird old books or whatever. Yeah. It's a burden you are forced to be responsible for. So I don't know an example, this car is broken down, so it's like an albatross. It's an albatross around my neck, or
It's like something that's holding you down when it doesn't necessarily need to be. It's a useless, almost, inconvenience.
But you're still responsible for it, so you have to deal with it. Mm. But it's actually from a poem in the late 18th century written by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, called "The Rime of the Ancient Mariner." And so it's when I say poem, it's one of those old poems where they're I'm going to write a book-sized poems. It's not one of our modern short poems where it's hey there, boss, here's an albatross and it makes me cross.
What?
I don't know. If you're write a poem about an albatross, I'm albatross, man, I'm cross about this albatross. Hmm. But I'm the boss. I'm the boss of the albatross. But no, this is an old timey poem that's 30 pages long. So I didn't read it. I'm going to say that. But I did read the Spark Notes for it. And now I'm going to give you a summary of the Spark Notes of this 30 page long poem. So basically, there's a superstition that killing an albatross at sea brings bad luck. And I don't know where that superstition started from. I think it's albatrosses are supposed to be related to wind spirits or something. They're good wind spirits. And if you kill one, you'll piss off the wind spirits, which is bad if you're a sailor. But in this poem written by this old English dude, one of the sailors does kill an albatross because that's, I'm going to kill the albatross. And this causes angry spirits to push their ship into the equator, where it becomes bestilled, which basically the winds stop and the ship is just stuck in there. And so they're all going to starve and thirst to death.
Is that a real thing? That
you could stilled? Get stuck? Or, no, it's becalmed. Sorry, it's called becalmed.
But is that a real thing that could happen?
Yeah, if back in the old times, like if you had a ship that runs entirely on wind power and the winds stop, you're kind of screwed if the winds don't start back up again.
What about paddling? Can you get your paddles out or is the boat?
It's a big boat. Pretty big boat. I mean, ooh, the Vikings did do paddling with their big boats because they would like enslave people and make them man all the paddles. But I think if you're in like a da 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 da, you know, like like 18th century boat, and you just got those big sails and there's no wind, you're kind of doomed.
It's my nightmare.
But so like all the other sailors blames the bird murderer for causing this to happen, and as punishment, they force him to wear the dead albatross around his neck. Since now they're all going to die of thirst and they're mad at him. And it's like, this is your fault. Now you have to wear this albatross.
That's very Bjork.
Yeah. Didn't she wear a swan or something?
Same thing. Cause the neck went around her neck and like was like the top, the halter, if you will. That's what it made me think of immediately.
And that generated so much like media controversy that she always had to address in interviews and stuff, that like, wasn't that itself an albatross around her neck? The swan dress around her neck was an albatross around her neck.
I'm snapping because of how on point that was.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That, and that's how good I am at literary analysis. Bjork analysis? Anyways. Yeah, the rest of the story gets really weird, so I do want to talk about it. Basically, so they're mad at this guy. They make him wear a dead bird. Then the spirit of death comes on a death ship and punishes all the sailors by having them slowly die one by one. Jeez. But punishes the bird murderer even more by making him undead and have to watch all his crewmates die and their corpses rot. This story goes from 0 to 100 really fast.
Yeah, it does.
And then the bird murderer is just like languishing on the ship, and he has a change of heart, and he's like staring into the ocean going like, I love all the animals in the sea. And then the spirits are like, oh, see, you learned your lesson, and all we had to do was kill everyone on your ship. So then the wind spirits like guide the ship back to shore, and then like a big whirlpool eats the whole ship and all the undead. I forgot. The spirits do inhabit the rotting bodies of all of his crewmates, brings them back alive enough so that they can man the ship and get it back to shore, which is, I guess, nice of them. But then only the mariner, the bird murderer guy, like, escapes the ship as it's getting sucked into a whirlpool. And then he gets saved by a couple of fishers. And then his punishment is, like, he has to spend eternity wandering the earth telling his bird murder story and how it's wrong to murder birds. Don't do it. Or else all your friends will get turned into zombies and then sucked into a whirlpool.
I don't know. I don't like that at all. That escalated so quickly.
I know. It was like, also, what is with, like, why would they punish all of the other sailors? Like, they killed them all. I mean, I guess he's like eternally damned or something is his punishment. He's got to tell this bird story. Oh, and also, he's telling the story at someone's wedding, I think. And
Like,
yeah, so he's like, this old, like, creepy sailor guy comes to your wedding. He's like, I'm actually a bird murderer and I'm a zombie.
No. He's just bad vibes.
I actually murdered a bird and now I'm a zombie doomed to patrol the land and tell everybody about my story about how I murdered a bird.
He's like that guy you start talking to, not realizing you're about to be in a conversation with him for 2 hours. And you're like, oh my God, wrap it up.
Yeah, I had that at a cafe where someone came up to me and started crying about how, like, he met Katy Perry and, like, how she needs to take better care of her skin. And while I think that conversation was only 2 minutes, it certainly felt like 2 hours.
Well, those are some thoughts that you really have to know what's going on to, like, engage with. Like, what? Her skin?
Right. No. And he was, like, full on, like, sobbing about it. And I didn't, a complete stranger, and, like, just sat at my table and was like, I just came back from a party with Katy Perry, and like, this girl, like, she needs to take better care of herself. And it's like, I don't think he was lying, but I do think it was because, like, you know, we live in LA, anything's possible. But yeah. I was scared of what was happening because I it's like I don't know Katy Perry. Maybe talk to her about this. I'm not a dermatologist either. Please, sir.
But you're so concerned now for her skin.
May I enjoy my lentil soup in peace, sir? Mm-mm. No? All right. I guess we're having this conversation then. This is great.
That's like it. Such a before time story. That would never happen today. No one's allowed near anyone anymore.
Someone took too many drugs at Katy Perry's party, got really weepy, and decided to approach a stranger about Katy Perry's need to do better skincare regimen. Yeah, it's great.
I feel for her.
Anyways, that's the modern the rhyme of the ancient mariner tale, I guess. I should write a 30-page poem about that. But albatrosses, this is an animal show. Let's talk about the real-life albatrosses and what they are. So what is an albatross? Is it just like a really big seagull? No.
Oh.
It's not. There you go. Answer solved.
Okay.
Podcast over. No, I'm kidding. So albatrosses are a family of some of the largest seabirds and one of the best terrestrial flyers in the world. So despite their amazing flying abilities and similar look to a seagull, albatrosses are more closely related to penguins than to seagulls, which is, again, another like kind of bonkers like evolutionary thing. We looked at the flying squirrel and the sugar glider and colugo, and it's like these are not at all related. Well, yeah, the albatross is more closely related to a little waddling penguin than it is to a seagull.
Wow. I'm looking up the photos to compare. They definitely have, they have like the penguin face, but they have the seagull beak.
It's strange, right? Because penguins are not good flyers because they can't fly at all. They're zero flyers. But they have adapted to become very efficient swimmers, whereas albatrosses adapted to become the world's most efficient flyers. So it's just kind of incredible, the twists and turns that evolution can take.
Yeah, wow.
So there are somewhere between 13 to 24 species of albatross. The reason this number is variable is that there are disagreements on some of the taxonomy, like whether there's like a species that's actually two species, or if it's one species, or if it's truly an albatross, like blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm not going to get into it because if I try to weigh in on the controversy, the albatross controversy, I'm going to get like some very angry letters from like albatross experts. Like,
oh no, don't at us about this. We're just two little ladies trying to figure it out.
I can't get attacked by albatross Twitter.
No,
I'll be ruined. So the largest albatross and one of the largest birds in the world are the wanderer albatrosses and the southern royal albatross species, who they both live around the southern oceans, and they have the largest wingspan in the world of up to 11 feet or 3.5 meters.
That's too big.
They are taller. Like if when they stand wing to wing, they're taller than basically every human except for maybe a few outliers.
Are they taller than Shaq?
Yes. Is it? Well, I mean, Shaq's not 11 feet tall, right?
I don't know anymore, Katie. This is just so wild. They're so big.
I'm Googling it.
No, I don't think he's 11 feet tall.
Next to my Google search of hummingbird hat is Shaquille O'Neal. He is a mere 7 feet 1 inch tall. What a shrimp.
He's a small guy.
And I actually shared an image with you, Anna. And
oh, I see.
I'll share it with the listeners as well. It's a full-grown human being standing next to one of these birds.
I don't like that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, they're dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. I forgot. They're dinosaurs.
That bird is way too big.
Yeah. So what do they look like? They tend to be white with pink or yellow long beaks with a downward curve at the end. And they can have gray, brown, and yellow markings. So their wings are often dark gray. And they have what looks like black eyeliner sometimes. Mm-hmm. Very, very Maybelline. Maybe it's birds. Maybe it's Maybelline.
But it's also like a bit of a smoky eye. It's really cute.
It's very good. I can't. What I wouldn't give to be able to do my eyes like albatrosses do their eyes. It's very good. It's very on point.
You wish you could have such great makeup, eye makeup.
I know. I wish I could have bird eyes, sexy eyes like a bird.
Same.
So, speaking of sexy eyes, albatrosses mate for life and are very loving. So, like I mentioned at the top of the episode, they're kind of like hummingbirds are little jerk asses when it comes to mating. They fight, they compete with other males, and they like joust, and it's kind of scary. Albatrosses are sweethearts. They're romantic. They select a mate by dancing with them. Oh. And basically, it's just like a bunch of albatrosses all gathered together on an island, and they dance with a bunch of different partners, and like the part like all on the dance floor, and then partners keep dropping off and separating until they're left with the one partner that they choose, and they dance together, and they will mate for life. So they, throughout their courtship and throughout their life, they will continue to dance together and do little move, like little gestures of affection, like beak bumps and nuzzles to maintain their relationship. So it's adorable. They'll like sit like beak to beak and like kind of tap their beaks together lovingly. It's so cute. They even come up with their own little love language between the two of them. They have unique calls they only use with their partners. So they basically come up with like loving names for each other and unique calls that they use with each other. And the only time they seek out a new partner is if one of them sadly dies. Like they're in it for the long haul. Ride or die. Ride or die, baby.
Ride or die.
And yeah, I mean, they do sometimes die. So then it's like, Well, I guess we don't ride if you're dead. But, you know, ride or die. It's really important for them to have this monogamous lifestyle because of the way they raise their chicks. So they have one chick at a time, and it's an adorable little fluff ball. And they will stay with the chick to guard it. So one of the parents has to stay and guard this chick because it's helpless and it would be a delicious little nugget for a predator. So one parent stays behind to protect their nest. They will do everything they can to fend off predators while the other parent will be out at sea fishing, and they will collect a bunch of fish so that they can come home and they eat the fish. And what they do is they regurgitate special fish vomit for their chick to eat when they get back. So the birds are totally reliant on each other to remain faithful. So the bird awaiting will go without food sometimes for days or weeks with their chick and is just relying on their partner to come back. And the partner out at sea has to rely on the partner to stay with the chick and keep it safe. So they alternate too. Like sometimes the male will go out for fishing. Sometimes the female will go out. So
I love that. I love the equality in the household.
Right. It's a lot of trust, too. A lot of trust. And in addition to be adorable spouses and adorably loving parents, they are the world's most efficient flyers. So albatrosses can rack up a massive number of frequent flyer miles. The wandering albatross, that uncomfortably large one we talked about earlier, can fly several million miles in a lifetime.
Okay.
Bird flight, like not even on an airplane. They're not like getting on Delta. You know what I mean?
I mean, they should. Do you know how many miles they'd have racked up if they did?
Dude.
They'd be flying for free for the rest of their lives.
Free vacations for the rest of their lives. It's a shame that Delta doesn't count bird miles. Their resting heart rate while flying is the same as when they're floating on water. They're able to exert very little effort and glide on strong winds. MIT researchers have found that the birds use roller coaster-like arcs of flight to ride wind currents called dynamic soaring. So basically, they use physics of these wind currents above the sea to glide and ride on them, so they'll like go down and build up momentum and go up a wind current and go down. Whoops, I bumped my microphone. But I guess if I was an albatross flying, I would bonk into my microphone like that. Anyways, so they totally take advantage of the physics of air currents above the ocean. And they are able to just kind of like glide like an airplane. They're like the total opposites of the hummingbirds, both in courtship behavior and also like their flight, where albatrosses are in it for like the long gliding, and hummingbirds are just sort of very, very fast and YOLO birds, and these are very responsible birds that just want to settle down.
Did you say yellow or YOLO?
YOLO birds. Hummingbirds are like YOLO. You only live once.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought you said, but then I was like, there's no way she said that.
No, of course, because they like
YOLO.
They live fast. They have shorter lifespans. They have really fast metabolism. They gotta get from one flower to another. They do not mate for life. They live very fast and furious lifestyles. Whereas the albatross has a very long lifespan and they take stuff more slowly. They kind of live more the Margaritaville lifestyle. And speaking of albatross lifespans, guess how old the oldest albatross in the world is?
Ooh, they're flying a million miles. Let's see. 30.
She is 70 years old.
Oh, my God.
And she looks fantastic. I've given you a picture of her. Her name is Wisdom, the albatross. And she is at the very least 70 years old, still rocking amazing, amazing smoky eye.
Yeah.
And so she lives in Kapaa, Hawaii. And she is not only the oldest albatross, she's the oldest known wild bird. So while you may think like, well, there are parrots that have potentially live longer, the birds that have lived longer have been in captivity. So she's a completely wild bird, and she's lived this long, which is amazing. And it's harder to live that long in the wild. She's had over 40 chicks in her lifetime. And while that like may not seem like a lot, they have one chick at a time. It's like a human being having 40 children in a lifetime.
No, I think that's a lot. 40 kids?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah, so she's actually outlived several of her mates. She never divorced. She's never been divorced. She's just like
a forever widower.
A black widower, yeah. She's had successful relationships.
Are their deaths explained or have they all just mysteriously disappeared?
He's got beak marks in his back, ma'am. Well, I wouldn't know where that came from.
How interesting.
Strange.
Police officer, you know I couldn't possibly be involved.
Have I mentioned how beautiful your feathers are, Mr. Police Officer Bird? Oh, well, that's awfully kind of you. How would you like to be Mrs. 70-year-old albatross lady? Sorry, Mr. 70-year-old albatross lady.
Her beak is, you can see her beak has some wear and tear though. Like that's a beak of a 70-year-old bird.
That's what I found really interesting. Her feathers look impeccable, mm-hmm. pun intended, but her beak does look marred and like old, because I wonder if like the feathers, you know, they molt.
Regenerate, they probably have, whatever.
They regenerate feathers probably more often than they regenerate like that beak, hard beak material. Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely like that is the beak of a 70-year-old bird. A hard smoking, whiskey drinking 70-year-old bird.
That bird smokes for sure. You're right. You're right.
Sweetie, let me tell you about the time my fourth husband. I loved him so much. His name was Marty.
Oh my God.
Well, he got eaten by a shark. You know how it is. I told him, Marty, you can't wear that bathing suit. That looks like a bunch of hot dogs or a shark's gonna eat you.
Oh,
and a shark did eat him, but God bless him. He was one of my better husbands.
That's 100%. If that bird talks, that's what she sounds like. She's like, a little after my, you know, 34th child, you know, I decided I was gonna, you know, get a new man.
Well, you know, my 35th child went to art school. I told him he should be a lawyer, but he went to art school.
Nobody listens to me. They just said they just said, don't listen to that old bird. And now here I am. I'm the smartest bird alive. Look at my eye makeup.
Amazing. She's beautiful. And she's also like, it's weird because she's outlived some of her, the scientists who have studied her, which is, I mean, kind of mind boggling, I guess. Like what the scientist who banded her originally, which means like putting a leg band on them so they can be identified.
Right.
Actually died before this bird has. So
look, if I was going to be a bird, that's how I would do it. I would outlive every scientist who tried to study me.
I had a bird watcher, and that bird watcher thought he could outlive me. No way. Listen, I smoke 5 packs a day, and I'm still kicking.
Just drinking martinis.
Sangrias and martinis.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, good for her.
She's amazing. Good for her. Exactly. Good for her.
Live her best life.
For outliving humans. Good for her.
She'll outlive us. Probably. We'll see.
Hopefully, I hope she is like a 200-year-old bird. Just
that'd be wild.
Rocking it.
How old's the bird that's like after her? Like, is there like a large gap? Like, who's the second oldest albatross?
Second oldest albatross.
I'm curious.
Search off. Second oldest albatross. 9 oldest birds in the world from oldest.org for all your needs about old things.
Good.
Let's see. Oh, so, okay. I'll just like, let's end the episode by going through this list of oldest birds, shall we?
Okay.
From oldest.org.
As you do, yes.
I'll put, cue some dramatic music over this. So in Chile, the oldest flamingo is believed to be in her 60s.
Wow. Flamingo in her 60s. Now that is like really like a retired woman, a flamingo.
Yeah, she still looks gorgeous. Of course, they list wisdom here. Mm. Now, wait a minute. Oh, I see. So one of the oldest birds in the world is actually a captive bird in Beardsley Zoo in Connecticut. He is a male Andean condor who is 80 years old or was. Oh. No, wait. He was 80 years old in 2010. I don't know if he's still alive, but that is respectable. Now, he does look 80 years old, I got to say.
Wow. Now, has he met wisdom?
You can't play matchmaker with these birds,
you're
Anna.
Right. No, you're right. They would be perfect together.
I don't know. Maybe wisdom's into like young guys. You know what I mean? Young birds.
Let's see.
A real cougar.
Oh my God, he's so handsome.
He is. I like his little puffy white neck ruff. I think that really brings another level to his style. You know what? I actually agree with you now. I do think that he and Wisdom share a similar aesthetic.
Yeah, let's try and get them to meet. I mean, he may disappear.
Yeah. Ugh. There's another flamingo at a zoo who is at least 83 years old. Wow. Flamingos live a long time, a long dang time. I didn't realize.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all.
A cockatoo at a Brookfield Zoo named Cookie the Cockatoo lived to be 83 years old. And a female greenwing macaw named Poncho at Beck's Pets and Exotics was 92 years old in 2018.
Wait, this bird just lived in a store and no one would buy him?
Why would you put that thought in my head, Anna? That's
I'm sorry,
so sad.
I don't know.
I think he was the pet store's pet.
Okay, there you go. He's fine. He's living a great life.
Oh my God. Fred, the cockatoo, the male sulfur-crusted cockatoo at Bonorong Wildlife Sanctuary was 103 years old in 2018. Oh my God. Charlie, the female blue and yellow macaw of the Healthfield Nurseries in Surrey, England, was 114 years in 2014.
Okay, that's old. That's an old bird.
Cocky Bennett, he's a male sulfur-crested cockatoo owned by some Australian guy in 1916, was 120 years old when it died.
Just owned by some Australian
guy. I have to show you this ancient goddamn bird. It's definitely looks old. Like, very old.
That bird's not alive.
Sadly, I think it is.
Oh my gosh. It looks like it's like put me out of my misery.
I know. I feel sorry for this bird because it looks like the tip of its beak is really long, which it should be. The tips of their beak, I guess, keep growing and you should have something hard for them to chew on. So it files it down, but it's just grown into this like really long protrusion.
Yeah, it's got like Prince bird. Philip vibes, you know, where we were all like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, poor Cocky Bennett. Oh,
sorry,
man.
Cocky Bennett, but you look a little old.
He looks slightly like a plucked turkey. Oh. I don't mean to roast this very old bird, but I can't help it.
You're roasting the bird.
I'm roasting the bird. Well, I think that's where we'll end it today with me being super mean to like geriatric bird.
What are you going to do?
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and discovering all the wonders of flight with me.
Thank you for having me. You got anything to plug?
You
could check out my bird diaries. Just kidding. I would never. I have a podcast called Ethnically Ambiguous on the iHeart Network. You can check that out. It's all about being a person of color in America. We interview a lot of great creators. I produce a bunch of podcasts. Like Daily Zeitgeist, Las Culturistas, This Is Important. Just, you know, out here producing up a storm. So, and then I also co-host a Twitch stream every Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. PST called Deckheads, Chief Stews, about the Below Deck Bravo series. And we also talk about other Bravo shows. And we talk a little about the F1 Netflix series. And I host that with Molly Lambert. If you want to check that out, please check it out. But you can also follow me at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh, if you just want to keep up with what I'm up to and see what else I'm, you know, producing and putting out. And so you can follow me and check out that stuff.
Check out all that stuff. You can find the podcast on the internet at Creature Feature Pod on Instagram, at Creature Feet Pod on Twitter. That's F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. That is something very different. You can also, if you want to ask me questions, send me an email at creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com. I try to answer everyone's questions. There might be a slight lag between when you send it and when I answer it, but don't worry, I really do try to get to everyone's question. And sometimes I will read it aloud on the show if I feel like I can get a good podcast out of it. So thank you so much for sending those in. And if you're enjoying the show and you leave a rating and review, I will love you forever. It warms my heart whenever I read a review. And it also, between you and me, it's good for the algorithm. I'm just going to say that. It's not that I don't appreciate it from like hey, like this warms my heart and it makes me personally feel good. But also from an algorithmic point of view, it's also really good. So just keep that in mind, too. Thanks to the Space Causes for their super awesome song, Ex Illumina. Creature Features, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows, I don't judge you. See you next Wednesday!
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.